Blog Talk Radio.
You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run on.
Welcome to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, your host. Thank you for being with us tonight, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground, talk that matters.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the right of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
And good evening and welcome to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham and my co-host tonight is Alpha. Alpha, how are you?
Oh, I'm just wonderful on this brisk autumn evening.
Are we still calling it autumn because it feels like winter to me?
Well, not that my winter is any harsher than yours, but you'll know when winter shows.
Well, we've got the wind here today. Also, this week has been a tough week once again for our president. It has been a tough week for America. The news is not good. And for those out there who are listening, so welcome, extended to you at Our Common Ground. This is the place where we talk truth to power and ourselves, because sometimes we really need to talk to ourselves. We need to talk to ourselves and look through the black truth of events. What was on your plate this week, Alpha? Didn't get a chance to listen to the India Declare show very much this week, but I did catch both of your shows. And for people who are listening, Alpha is the host of The Alpha Show, which airs every Saturday at 3 p.m. here at Blog Talk Radio, and the Mo Alpha Show, which airs and broadcasts through the TruthWorks Network Radio. So what were your hot buttons this week?
Let me put it like this. My hot button was just the continuous lack of proactive aggression from progressive liberals and the Democratic Party. You know, we've taken it for so long. We've taken it, you know, everyone in the media talks about what the Republicans say, what they do, what they like, what they want. But they never have to defend any of their lies, any of their misquotes, any of their, you know, Fox News came out a couple of weeks ago with that $200 million a day trip to India. It was thoroughly debunked. And now it has just gone by the wayside rather than someone continuing, keeping it in their faces as just, you know, their history of lies. Then you had all of the insignificant stuff, the side issues, the side dishes, I'll call them, with the Limbaugh situation and, you know, talking about going to, what is the name of the network? You know, you're 22 months late with this, you know, feigned indignation over the race baiting, the hatred, the trolling for assassins, you know, and just to bring an African American NAACP, Urban League, the Al Sharpton group, the Reverend Jackson group together. That means nothing. The Hispanics should be right there with them, along with the Anti-Defamation League, the Jewish, because it just, you know, it spills over. Over and over and over again. And there, I mean, these licenses to air on public airways should be challenged. They should be demand. There should be a group large enough to demand that they shut the license, you know, the licensing process down for the people who carry, and shut him down, the people who carry a Rush Limbaugh and all the other hate and bigoted talk out there. You know, it's one thing to, you know, you got freedom of speech, but we also have freedom to shut it down where we can. And that should be, you know, they couldn't shut down NPR, by the way. The Republicans tried to defund it, and it fell, you know, it fell to a vote. So I guess they'll wait until sometime in January, and they'll be right back. See, they don't let, when did they fire Juan Williams? And it's still a huge topic for them to defund NPR, even though it's only less than 1% of their budget. But, you know, that's what I mean when I say,
you
know, they continue.
You mean 1% of NPR's budget?
Right, NPR's budget.
Not of
it's a drumbeat.
Not of the budget of the Congress, yeah.
Right, it's a constant drumbeat. Their issues have absolutely no end game. There's no ending to their issues. Whereas when they make mistakes, when they speak and preach lies, you know, it just seems to fade away because there's no one willing to keep the issue going. Like I said, everybody has
the
right to.
Well, part of the problem is that we pay attention to the mundane issues. We've got two really big things going on right now, and I don't hear anybody talking about it. And I absolutely agree. You know, we talk about the Democrats don't push back, the Democrats don't do that, basically because there is really no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. They're all Republicrats, and they don't want to push back. They want these messages out. They want these messages to be the center and core of what American people are talking about. I mean, this whole nonsense where you go on Twitter, you go on Facebook, you go on MySpace, you go on almost any blog, they're talking about Barbara Bush saying she wished that Sarah Palin would stay in Alaska. They're talking about whether or not Sarah Palin's daughter ought to win Dancing with the Stars. They're talking about some man who forbids his congregation from using Facebook, and now that same pastor has admitted to the three-way sexual relationship with his wife and a male church assistant. They're talking about things that don't even matter, but they're not talking about, and nobody's concentrating on something that I pointed out to you on your show today, that the absolute ignorance of the American people who don't know that the GOP took back the House. They're not talking about how veterans' families are suffering in poverty. They're not talking about this new Afghan war that could cost American taxpayers $125 billion. They're not talking about the fact that if we think we are in a recession now, you wait until these banks figure out that they're never going to get millions back because of these bad foreclosure documents, and it's going to pose a real economic risk to us. That's what they're not talking about. Now let's can I switch it a little bit, Alpha? What are people of peace and goodwill, talking about, not talking about. I don't know if you are aware, something that's very disturbing to me. Lynn Stewart, who has been a progressive, revolutionary lawyer, who went to jail last year this time for, because of her relationship, her lawyer-client relationship was violated by, because of the Patriot Act. And because of it, she went to prison. She's 70 years old with some tremendous health problems. She is being moved out of New York, either today or yesterday or maybe tomorrow or Monday. The federal government is not telling her family, her lawyers, or anyone else where she's been moved. I look at this story and I say, my God, this is America. This week, a man who videotaped his own arrest by police when he was protesting the war. His house was ramshackled by the local police. They seized his computer. They seized his documents in his house without a warrant. He is in jail, and now he may go to prison for videotaping an arrest by the police.
Welcome to America.
I just don't understand. What?
Welcome to America and the Patriot. Thank you, George Bush.
This is exactly. This is America. And we haven't gotten past the notion that, we haven't gotten past the notion in our thinking about what's going on in our lives in bizarro world. We're witnessing the emergence of the mindset among the petite bourgeoisie and working classes, and a good example is the TSA airport security people. And this is the kind of environment that made it possible for totalitarianism and totalitarian regimes to flourish and grow in other countries. We can call it what we will, but we are witnessing and unfolding more rapidly and pervasively than we probably realize. You better get your passports renewed. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, Dennis, you pointed out two draconian uses of this Patriot Act. And when you really sit back and look at it, this is the kind of tyranny that they're accusing this president of, because this is the kind of tyranny that they are guilty of. And
mm-hmm.
when you start talking about how they enforce this Patriot Act, you can only sit and shake your head, because they are only enforcing this type of draconian law of this Patriot Act on people who push back against the right. You don't see anybody from the right going to jail under these circumstances. Nobody.
Well,
and this is what's
I think that we are not focusing. My point was that we are not focusing on the right at the right place. I think we talked about this in great deal last week. We're focusing. We're allowing this lazy corporatist media to point us in the wrong direction. You know, if you look at, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you did catch it. The Rachel Maddow show, I don't know if it was Wednesday or Thursday night, when she looked at how anonymously sourced stories demonstrating falsehoods, which became the story of the day in the American media.
Yeah, but you have those who simply sit back and say that that's freedom of speech. Oh, okay, but you're entitled to your opinion, but when you use the public airways to spread that type, it's propaganda. If it's not true, it's propaganda. It's a lie. And there's a difference with free speech. You can say what you want to say. You can do what you want to do. And free speech, everybody have their say in it. But just as you have your right to free speech, we have a right to challenge the false speech, the lies. And it, to me, it's like there's no meshing of the two. Say what you will, but we have a right to challenge that with the FCC and then the whole nine yards. Not just not listen to it, because that's not having the desired effect. So you look at it, I mean, I look at it that way. So if you've got a right to say it, we've got a right to protest it, we've got a right to try to stop it. And if you want to say it, pay to say it on your own airways, not on the public airways.
Well, I think that, you know, in the United States right now, we have two national narratives. The first being that of the melting pot and place of refuge for the poor huddled masses fleeing pogroms and poverty. That's one. We don't hear much of that kind of that narrative. The other one is seldom out of the headlines as politicians such as like Sarah Palin are praised for their frontier spirit. The frontier myth remains a really potent one in this country. It is problematic for two reasons. The first is that it is utterly anachronistic. The American frontier was officially declared closed 120 years ago. The second is that it is founded on the pitiless and almost total genocide of the Native American people. Those are the you know, and we buy into those narratives. And that's why tonight I'm asking the question, do we further enable as people of goodwill, people of justice, people who believe in peace, people who believe that at some point we have to begin to think through our existence. And I'm raising the issue, and I'm not trying to, you know, I know the people out there saying, you're trying to kill off my turkey dinner. You're trying to kill off my sense of being American. But the question of black people and the American holiday called Thanksgiving, I think, is a very valid one. The politics of Thanksgiving, what we tell ourselves and our children about this holiday that we're about to come under. You know, and I'm not trying to kill, I'm not trying to put a sour taste to your Thanksgiving dinner. There are a number of holidays which remain steeped in political controversy. And few of us do not participate in American holidays in some way. And I'm asking the question, are we really just fooling ourselves that it is really about giving thanks when we sit down with our families to celebrate this holiday? And I want people out there to consider that Martin Luther King Day, it was based on legislation that took many heated years to enact. And the 4th of July, Frederick Douglass, if for those of you who are familiar with Frederick Douglass's speech, What to the American Slave is the 4th of July. Even Christmas invites its share of controversy. Columbus Day is another holiday on point. Some argue that we should not celebrate Columbus because he was not the first to reach the Western Hemisphere. Native Americans have been here for thousands of years. It's also noted that Columbus failed in his goal to find a Western route to Asia, blah, blah, blah. But I'm looking tonight, I'm asking our audience to look at this upcoming Thanksgiving Day, which also is no stranger to controversy. It's a celebration that's steeped in deep political controversy, and I don't think that we stop to think about that. The first feast was held in 1621, and for generations, American school children have been taught that the feast was held to give thanks to the Native Americans who helped the pilgrims. And actually, this holiday was not a federal holiday until 1941, and President Franklin Roosevelt, following many years of controversy, declared it so by signing a law making the last Thursday of November Thanksgiving Day. But what I'm asking our audience to do tonight is to be mindful of the history and politics surrounding Thanksgiving Day as people prepare and celebrate. Many black families will celebrate Thanksgiving as a way of getting families together. You know, some people will call it Family Day. In our family, in my house, we call it Family Day because it is a day that we have off where we don't do the Sunday dinner route. We don't do the other stuff. But it is one day in the year where we're not distracted by Christmas presents and Kwanzaa presents. We can just sit down and enjoy each other. But how we enter and use this holiday can help us to resolve our conflicts not only about original people's history in this country, but about our own history. I'm asking the question, what do we tell our children? And I know that, you know, there are some that will say, well, you know, you tell your children that it's Thanksgiving. But I think that we have to go more to that. So we want to thank all of you who have joined us in our chat room. If you are listening and you are not part of our chat room, you can join us at blogtalkradio.com/OCG, and you are welcome to join in the discussion. Let's begin this conversation. I think it's a hard conversation, and some people are going to have to unravel it. So I've put together some tidbits of how this holiday came to be and what the political conflicts and implications might be. Thank you again for being with us at Our Common Ground.
Personality and culture as instrument.
Still celebrate the survival of the early colonists at Plymouth. by giving thanks to the Christian God who supposedly protected and championed the European invasion. The real meaning of all that, then and now, needs to be continually excavated. The myths and lies that surround the past are constantly draped over the horrors and tortures of our present. As black people, descendants of slaves, we know how history can be and is buried. Every school child in the United States has been taught that the pilgrims of the Plymouth colony invited the local Indians to a major harvest feast after surviving their first bitter year in New England. But the real story of Thanksgiving, is a story of the murder of indigenous people and the theft of their land by European colonialists and of the ruthless way of capitalism. Tonight at Our Common Ground, we ask the question, is the story of genocide hidden inside your Thanksgiving turkey? This is Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. We need to excavate. Thank you for joining us tonight. This is the story of Thanksgiving. In midwinter 1620, the English ship Mayflower landed on the North American coast, delivering 102 exiles. The original native people of this stretch of shoreline had already been killed off. In 1614, a British expedition had landed there. When they left, they took 24 Indians as slaves and left smallpox behind. 3 years of plague wiped out between 90 and 96% of the inhabitants of the coast, destroying most villages completely. The Europeans landed and built their colony called the Plymouth Plantation near the deserted ruins of the Indian village of Pawtucket. They ate from abandoned cornfields grown wild. Only one Pawtucket named Squanto had survived. He had spent the last years as a slave to the English and Spanish in Europe. Squanto spoke the colonists' language and taught them how to plant corn and how to catch fish until the harvest. Squanto also helped the colonists negotiate a peace treaty with the nearby Wampanoag tribe led by the chief Massasoit. These were very lucky breaks for the colonists. The first Virginia settlement had been wiped out before they could establish themselves. Thanks to the goodwill of the Wampanoag, the settlers now only survived their first year, but had an alliance with the Wampanoags that would give them almost two decades of peace. John Winthrop, a founder of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, considered this wave of illness and death to be a divine miracle. He wrote to a friend in England, "But for the natives in these parts, God hath so pursued them. As for 300 miles space, the greatest part of them are swept away by smallpox, which still continues among them. So as God hath thereby cleared our title to this place, those who remain in these parts, being in all not 50, have put themselves under our protection." The deadly impact of European disease and the goodwill of the Wampanoag allowed the settlers to survive their first year. In celebration of their good fortune, the colony's governor, William Bradford, declared a three-day feast of Thanksgiving after that first harvest of 1621. This is the story of celebration. Looking at this history raises a question. Why should anyone celebrate the survival of the earliest Puritans with a Thanksgiving Day? Certainly the native peoples of those times had no reason to celebrate. The ruling powers of the United States organized people to celebrate Thanksgiving because it was in their interest. That's why they created it. The national celebration of Thanksgiving was called by George Washington, and the celebration was made a regular legal holiday by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, right as he sent troops to suppress the Sioux of Minnesota. Washington and Lincoln were two presidents deeply involved in trying to forge a unified bourgeoisie nation-state out of the European settlers in the United States. And the Thanksgiving story was a useful myth in their efforts at U.S. nation-building. It celebrates the bounty of the American way while covering up the brutal nature of this society. I'm Janice Graham. At our common ground. Consider and excavate.
Well, Alpha, how does that do you for your Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, let me put it real delicately. You know, we have been over the years, from the very time that we began to learn the indoctrination of what that day means, the rewriting of history, the way the truth has been left out of the equation, giving us a perception of this is somehow a good day. So now that everyone here in this nation celebrates it, it is very, very difficult to raise this issue and get people to see and get people to understand what it really means. And that's what's problematic about the entire scenario.
We'd like to hear from you at 347-838-9852 at Our Common Ground. How are you explaining your celebration of Thanksgiving? How have you, if you have, broken away from the tradition? Our number is 347-838-9852. Alpha and I would like to talk with you here at Our Common Ground. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear more about the Thanksgiving story. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, we can play some happy songs tonight. Y'all ready? Are y'all ready to say yes? Y'all ready to say yes?
This is Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
I want to know why I'm fine 1 minute and the next my body aches so bad I can't move.
I want to know why my hair is falling out. I'm only 17.
I'm tired all the time.
Now, this rash. I just want to know what's going on.
When you don't have the right answers, it may be time to ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run on mud. Woo!
Hello. Hello, Marvin. Yeah, who is this? Frankie, what's happening?
Yeah, man, look here. Fuck. need something funky going down.
Oh, man,
I'm over here working.
And thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. Something funky is really going down. And I'm wondering if we're paying attention. Tonight at Our Common Ground, we're talking about a natural conflict that we all should have around the celebration of Thanksgiving. How do you celebrate it? How do you explain it to your children? How do you tell them the truth about history on one hand and celebrate that history on the other hand? Alpha, we're going to go to our phones. 754 is on the air. Thank you so much for joining us on Our Common Ground. I respect you.
Well, I hope so. Yes. 754.
What are you thinking about for Thanksgiving?
I don't do Thanksgiving, and I haven't done it in a long time. I don't feel comfortable celebrating, which was basically a mass murder of, you know, the Indians. So I don't do it, don't like it, and I try, and I've explained that to my kids, and I'm trying to explain it now to my grandbabies why there's no Thanksgiving.
Do you think we'll ever?
Go ahead, I'm listening.
Do you think that in this country there will be ever a time when we'll come to a full understanding of how offensive this holiday might be to some Americans, to the original Americans?
Well, to them, yes, and to some of us, it is offensive, but to the for the majority, no. They enjoy this holiday, and that's the sad part about it. You have a lot of our own people, black people, that love this holiday, just as they do with Christmas, and you know, Columbus Day and other days that they shouldn't be celebrating either, but they do because they are so brainwashed and caught up in the American dream.
So you think it's all part, it's a thread that runs through this mythical American dream?
Yes.
Do you ever think that black people stop to think, what if there was a holiday which celebrated the day that the first Africans were brought to these shores?
Would they celebrate it?
Yes.
Yes. I do believe that. And it would be done out of the stupidity of not knowing.
Not knowing what? What is there to not know?
Okay, I figure that the way that they would do it is word it some kind of way that it was done in a way like with Thanksgiving, and the majority of the black people would not take the time to figure out what that day actually meant. So, yes, they would celebrate it. Because, you know, we like to party and eat and drink and all that, so that just gives them one more day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can go back as an example as when I was a kid. Martin Luther King Day was not a legal holiday, but what did we do on that day? We took that day off automatically. My parents made us aware that, you know what, we didn't have to go to school, even though we were supposed to be in school, but we didn't. And eventually the white folks said, you know what, we got too many of these black kids not in school, so we just might as well make this a holiday. And they did.
It's interesting, 754, that you bring this up, because one of the things that I had thought about, and Alpha, I don't know if you've thought about or anybody in our audience, but now they have this big thing on Martin Luther King Day where the theme is it's not a day off, it's a day for work. It's a day doing something. But when we celebrate President's Day or any other holiday, nobody tries to tell you what to do with it.
Exactly.
Well, that goes to a point I've been making all day. It's about how the narrative is framed. And they use this weapon, which is the media, to frame everything as to, you know, like you said, they tell us how to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday. They tell us how to celebrate Thanksgiving, Christmas. They tell us how to celebrate. This is about a perception. This is about the indoctrination of a people and where we're going. When we talk about, I've got 12 grandchildren, I've got 3 grown children. In a setting of Thanksgiving, we all gather, there's festivities going on, and let me raise the issue of genocide and how, you know, the dark side of Thanksgiving. No one wants to hear that. And I'm just being honest about it. You know, this particular topic, this particular subject on this program this evening is very much needed. Very much needed. But as I always say, the people who should be listening aren't. The people who are unaware will remain unaware because they're not interested. Because they have been so indoctrinated into the celebration, you know, the happy time, the same just as Christmas. Look at how they respond. Look at how it's been commercialized. Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, all of the holidays. And therein lies the problem.
Well, one of the things, and I want to address this to both you, Alpha, and to the caller, is that there are many holidays. I mean, if you take Christmas, there's no Christ in Christmas in America. So it's almost like we mindlessly, and that's what I'm asking our audience tonight, to be mindful. To be mindful in their thinking about this particular holiday. You know, we have Perry Steele in our chat room, and he's saying, you know, Indians don't like black people. Well, I don't know that. All the Native Americans I know, I don't know. I mean, we make sweeping statements rather than looking at our history. Somebody told us that Indians owned black slaves. But if you go into really researching the history of that, they were runaway slaves who were indentured in some of the tribal lands.
Exactly.
So, you know, we've got to figure out and we've got to do a comparative analysis of if they have lied for 400 years about our own history, they had to lie about the history of American natives. I mean, I've been to powwows in New England. I've been to many celebrations of original peoples in New England, and most of them are clearly African in their ancestry. I think, Alpha, I talked to you about this last year, that there were more black or African Indians at the powwow than there were pure in the Wampanoag tribe. Most of those people are dark-skinned, clearly with African blood. I think that we really have to not get, but what we do have to do, what we do know, is how history is buried in this country, how it is distorted in this country, how it was told in a way that it supports what the caller is talking about, the American dream. 754, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation. And you were about to say, and because of the delay, I interrupted you, but you were about to say that you do something different. What is it that you do?
I just have a family day, just like you do. We do other
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
yeah, I think that the conflict really creates a situation where, especially when you have children and they're talking about Thanksgiving at school for weeks at a time and what it means and then that's distorted and then you have to kind of like straighten them out. So you do something. It's like
yeah.
non-Christian families have to compete with the propaganda, the stress of Christmas.
Exactly.
So they
I don't do the
with
Christmas
their children.
Thing
so
either.
They do something.
Yeah.
And since it's a day that you get off, it is an opportunity for you to have family gatherings. But I do think that we have to be real mindful. Because if we continue to support bad history, we're supporting our own bad history.
That's true.
754, yep. 754, I suspect that you are Brother Morbe from Black Unity Radio. Why do
that
I
is
suspect
me.
That? thank you so much, my brother, for joining us tonight.
Not a problem.
It's such a
not
pleasure
a problem.
To have you with us. Such a
I'm
pleasure.
Glad to
and
be
thank
here.
You so much. And I hope you'll join us each Saturday night. And I would recommend to all of you who are listening to check out Black Unity Radio. It's blackunity.ning.com. Thank you, Brother Marbe. And we'll we wish you and your family a great gathering. And you know, Alpha, there are Native people who do have a gathering at Thanksgiving time, and they do call it the Great Gathering. Our number is 347-838-9852, and we invite you to join us in this discussion of the day that we call Thanksgiving. I'm not so sure that we should be calling it Thanksgiving. Let's go back and look at some more history, Alpha, for a minute.
Until 1629, there were no more than 300 settlers in New England, scattered in small and isolated settlements. But their survival inspired a wave of Puritan invasion that soon established growing in Massachusetts towns north of Plymouth, Boston, and Salem. For 10 years, boatloads of new settlers came, and as the number of Europeans increased, they proved not nearly so generous as the natives of the land. On arrival, the Puritans and other religious sects discussed who legally owns this land. They had to decide this, not just because of Anglo-Saxon traditions, but because their particular way of farming was based on individual, not communal, or tribal ownership. This debate over land ownership reveals that bourgeois rule of law does not mean protect the rights of the masses of people. Some settlers argued that the land belonged to the Indians. These forces were excommunicated and expelled. Massachusetts Governor Winthrop declared the Indians had not subdued the land, and therefore all uncultivated lands should, according to English common law, be considered public domain. This meant they belonged to the king. In short, the colonists decided they did not need to consult the Indians when they seized new lands. They only had to consult the representative of the crown, meaning the local governor. The colonists embraced a line from Psalms chapter 2, verse 8, quote, "Ask of me, and I shall give thee the brethren for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession," unquote. Since then, European settler states have similarly declared God their real estate agent, from the Boers seizing South Africa to the Zionists seizing Palestine. The European immigrants took land and enslaved Indians to help them farm it. By 1637, there were about 2,000 British settlers. They pushed out from the coast and decided to remove the inhabitants. Where did the Plymouth and Massachusetts colonies of Puritan and Separatist pilgrims come from, and what were they really all about? Governor Winthrop, a founder of the Massachusetts colony, said, quote, "We shall be as a city upon the hill, the eyes of which all people are upon us," unquote. The Mayflower Puritans had been driven out of England as subversives. The Puritans saw this religious colony as a model of a social and political order that they believed all of Europe should adopt. The Puritan movement was part of a sweeping revolt within English society against the ruling feudal order of wealthy lords. Only a few decades after the establishment of Plymouth, the Puritan Revolution came to power in England. They killed the king, won a civil war, set up a short-lived republic, and brutally conquered the neighboring people of Ireland to create a larger national market. The famous Puritan intolerance was part of a determined attempt to challenge the decadence and wastefulness of the rich, aristocratic landlords of England. The Puritans wanted to use the power of state punishment to uproot old and still dominant ways of thinking and behaving. The new ideas of the Puritans served the needs of merchant capitalist accumulation. The extreme discipline, thrift, and modesty the Puritans demanded of each other corresponded to a new and emerging form of ownership and production. Their so-called Protestant ethic was an early form of the capitalist ethic. From the beginning, the Puritan colonies intended to grow through capitalist trade, trading fish and fur with England, while they traded pots, knives, axes, alcohol, and other English goods with the Indians. New England was ruled by a government in which only the male heads of families had a voice. Women, Indians, slaves, servants, and youth were neither heard nor represented. In the Puritan school books, the old law, "Honor thy father and thy mother," was interpreted to mean honoring all our superiors, whether in family, school, church, and commonwealth. And the real truth was that the colonies were fundamentally controlled by the most powerful merchants. The Puritan fathers believed they were the chosen people of an infinite God, and that this justified anything they did. They were Calvinists who believed that the vast majority of humanity was predestined to damnation. This meant that while they were firm in fighting for their own capitalist right to accumulate and prosper, they were quick to oppress the masses of people. In Ireland, Scotland, and North America, once they seized the power to set up their own bourgeois order, those who rejected the narrow religious rules of the colonies were often simply expelled out into the wilderness. The Massachusetts colony north of Plymouth was founded when Puritan stockholders had gotten control of an English trading company. The king had given this company the right to govern its own internal affairs, and in 1629, the stockholders simply voted to transfer the company to North American shores, making this colony literally a self-governing company of stockholders. You are listening to a reading of Native Blood, The Myth of Thanksgiving. The full text of this essay is available online at kasamaproject.org. That's spelled K-A-S-A-M-A, project, one word, .org. In U.S. schools, students are taught that the Mayflower Compact of Plymouth contained the seeds of modern democracy and rule of law. But by looking at the actual history of the Puritans, we can see that this so-called modern democracy was, and still is, a capitalist democracy based on all kinds of oppression and serving the class interests of the ruling capitalists. In short, the Puritan movement developed as an early revolutionary challenge to the old feudal order in England. They were the soul of primitive capitalist accumulation, and transferred to the shores of North America, they immediately revealed how heartless and oppressive that capitalist soul is. In the Connecticut Valley, the powerful Pequot tribe had not entered an alliance with the British, as had others. At first, they were far from the centers of colonization. Then, in 1633, the British stole the land where the city of Hartford now sits, land which the Pequot had recently conquered from another tribe. That same year, two British slave raiders were killed. The colonists demanded that the Indians who killed the slavers be turned over. The Pequot refused. The Puritan preachers said, from Romans chapter 13, verse 2, quote, "Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation," unquote. The colonial governments gathered an armed force of 240 under the command of John Mason. They were joined by 1,000 allied native warriors. The historian Francis Jennings writes, quote, "Mason proposed to avoid attacking Pequot warriors, which would have overtaxed his unseasoned, unreliable troops. Battle as such was not his purpose. Battle is only one of the ways to destroy an enemy's will to fight. Massacre can accomplish the same end with less risk." And Mason had determined that massacre would be his objective. Unquote. The colonist army surrounded a fortified Pequot village on the Mystic River. At sunrise, as the inhabitants slept, the Puritan soldiers set the village on fire. William Bradford, governor of Plymouth, wrote, quote, "Those that escaped the fire were slain with the sword, some hewed to pieces, others run through with their rapiers, so that they were quickly dispatched, and a very few escaped. It was conceived they thus destroyed about 400 at this time. It was a fearful sight to see them thus frying in the fire. Horrible was the stink and scent thereof. But the victory seemed a sweet sacrifice, and they gave the prayers thereof to God, who had wrought so wonderfully for them." Unquote. Mason himself wrote, quote, "It may be demanded, should not Christians have more mercy and compassion? But sometimes the Scripture declareth women and children must perish with their parents. We had sufficient light from the Word of God for our proceedings." Unquote. 350 years later, the Puritan phrase, "a shining city on the hill," became a famous quote of conservative speechwriters. The so-called Pequot War was a one-sided murder and slaving expedition. Over 180 captives were taken. After consulting the Bible again, in Leviticus chapter 24, verse 44, the colonial authorities found justification to kill most of the Pequot men and enslave the captured women and their children. Only 500 Pequot remain alive and free. In 1975, the official number living in Connecticut was 21. Some of the war captives were given to allies of the British. Even before the arrival of Europeans, native peoples of North America had widely practiced taking war captives from other tribes as hostages and slaves. The remaining captives were sold to British plantation colonies in the West Indies to be worked to death in a new form of slavery that served the emerging capitalist world market. And with that, the merchants of Boston made a historic discovery. The profits they made from the sale of human beings virtually paid for the cost of seizing them. One account says that enslaving Indians became a mania with speculators. These early merchant capitalists of Massachusetts started to make genocide pay for itself. The slave trade, first in captured Indians and soon in kidnapped Africans, quickly became a backbone of New England merchant capitalism. In 1641, the Dutch governor offered the first scalp bounty. His government paid money for the scalp of each Indian brought to them. A couple of years later, the governor ordered the massacre of a friendly tribe. 80 were killed, and their severed heads were kicked like soccer balls down the streets of Manhattan. One captive was castrated, skinned alive, and forced to eat his own flesh while the Dutch governor watched and laughed. Then he hired the notorious Underhill, who had commanded in the Pequot War, to carry out a similar massacre near Stamford, Connecticut. The village was set on fire, and 500 Indian residents were put to the sword. A day of thanksgiving was proclaimed in the churches of Manhattan. As we will see, the European colonists declared Thanksgiving days to celebrate mass murder more often than they did for harvest and friendship. By the 1670s, there were about 30,000 to 40,000 white inhabitants in the United New England colonies, 6,000 to 8,000 able to bear arms. With the Pequot destroyed, the Massachusetts and Plymouth colonists turned on the tribe that had initially saved them in 1620 and probably joined them for the original Thanksgiving Day. In 1675, a Christian Indian was killed while spying for the Puritans. The Plymouth authorities arrested and executed three natives without consulting the tribal chief, King Philip. As Mao Zedong says, where there is oppression, there is resistance. The Indians went to war. The Indians applied some military lessons they had learned. They waged a guerrilla war which overran isolated European settlements and were often able to inflict casualties on the Puritan soldiers. The colonists again attacked and massacred the main Indian populations. When this war ended, 600 European men, 1/11 of the adult men of the New England colonies, had been killed in battle. Hundreds of homes and 13 settlements had been wiped out, but the colonists won. In their victory, the settlers launched an all-out genocide against the remaining native people. The Massachusetts government offered 20 shillings bounty for every Indian scalp and 40 shillings for every prisoner who could be sold into slavery. Soldiers were allowed to enslave any Indian woman or child under 14 they could capture. The praying Indians, who had converted to Christianity and fought on the side of European troops, were accused of shooting into the treetops during battles with hostiles. They were enslaved or killed. Other peaceful Indians of Dartmouth and Dover were invited to negotiate or seek refuge at trading posts and were sold onto slave ships. It is not known how many Indians were sold into slavery, but in this campaign, 500 enslaved Indians were shipped from Plymouth alone. Of the 12,000 Indians in the surrounding tribes, probably about half died from battle, massacre, and starvation. After King Philip's War, there were almost no Indians left free in the northern British colonies. A colonist wrote from Manhattan's New York colony, quote, "There is now but few Indians upon the island, and those few no ways hurtful. It is to be admired how strangely they have decreased by the hand of God since the English first settled in these parts." Unquote. In Massachusetts, the colonists declared a day of public thanksgiving in 1676, saying, quote, "There now scarce remains a name or a family of them, the Indians, but are either slain, captivated, or fled." Unquote. 55 years after the original Thanksgiving Day, the Puritans had destroyed the generous tribe who originally helped them and all other neighboring tribes. King Philip was beheaded. His head was stuck on a pole in Plymouth, where the skull still hung on display 24 years later. The descendants of these native peoples are found wherever the Puritan merchant capitalists found markets for slaves. The West Indies, the Azores, Algiers, Spain, and England. The grandson of the Pilgrim's original protector was sold into slavery in Bermuda. But even the destruction of Indian tribal life and the enslavement of survivors brought no peace. Indians continued to resist in every available way. Their oppressors lived in terror of revolt, and they searched for ways to end the resistance. One historian writes, quote, The first reservations were designed for the wild Irish of Ulster in 1609, and the first Indian reservation agent in America, like many other American immigrants, had seen service in Ireland under Cromwell. Unquote. The enslaved Indians refused to work and ran away. The Massachusetts government tried to control runaways by marking enslaved Indians. Brands were burnt into their skin, and symbols were tattooed into their foreheads and cheeks. A Massachusetts law of 1695 gave colonists permission to kill Indians at will, declaring it was, quote, lawful for any person, whether English or Indian, that shall find any Indians traveling or skulking in any of the towns or roads within specified limits, to command them under their guard and examination, or to kill them as they may or can, unquote. The northern colonists enacted more and more laws for controlling the people. A law in Albany forbade any African or Indian slave from driving a cart within the city. Curfews were set up. Africans and Indians were forbidden to have evening get-togethers. On Block Island, Indians were given 10 lashes for being out after 9 o'clock. In 1692, Massachusetts made it a serious crime for any white person to marry an African, an Indian, or a mulatto. In 1706, they tried to stop the importation of Indian slaves from other colonies, fearing a slave revolt. The full text of this essay, Native Blood, The Myth of Thanksgiving, is available online at kasamaproject.org. That's spelled K-A-S-A-M-A Project, one word, .org. Again, that's K-A-S-A-M-A Project, one word, .org. Music you heard during the segment is licensed through Creative Commons. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, your host. Thank you for being with us tonight. Speaking truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground. Talk that matters.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being.
Also, if you listen to the history of original peoples, you begin to really understand that the concept of the slave trade, the lessons learned from how Native people were treated, how they were enslaved, how they were used, how they were capitalized, really was formulated during this period. So when they discovered the Africans inside the continent, it was easy for them to plan out, to design American chattel slavery. Alpho? I think I lost Alpho. Alpha, did I lose you? Did I put you out of the chat room? Are you there? You're on now. Yeah,
oh.
You're. I had you on mute. I'm sorry. But,
oh, you didn't have
you
on mute. The call had dropped, and I called back, and you just didn't add me. Like I was saying, the one thing that stands out more than anything in that particular piece was their willingness. And they were, the way they used the Bible to justify mass murder. And I've said it over and over and over again. It's the same things that ring so true today. When you want to wrap yourself in patriotism and you use the Bible as the crutch to justify your stances, your beliefs, your behavior, and they use the Bible to flat out murder, flat out mass murder. So it leads you to, if these were people of another faith, let's just say, for instance, they were Muslims, why wouldn't they not be viewed upon back then the way Muslims have been so vilified now? They have used their religious teachings, their religious book, to justify mass murder, period. And that's what stood out to me more than anything, the mere fact that all of the draconian laws and rules and ordinances soon came behind all of that. They had to somehow justify their righteousness, and they did it with the Bible.
You know, but the thing is that there are many people in our time who would accept or embrace the notion that reparations, reservations would somehow make this right. And when you have destroyed the ancestral lands, when you attempted to destroy the ancestral, the culture of a people, I mean, one of the things that stands out in Native American history is that once Native Americans were taken into the mainstream, they were forbidden to speak their language, that tribes all across this country were mixed so that there could be no unification along tribal lines. It's the same thing. We've got a call at 443, from 443. You're on Our Common Ground. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Is this Ray?
Yeah, how you doing, man? I got a little bit tied back up, but I told you I'd try to catch up with y'all, so I called back in. How's it going?
How you doing this evening, Ray?
Doing all right, man. I'm here working. I got some work to do, but I'm listening to y'all at the same time, so I'm juggling two birds, one stone, whatever they say. You know, I think you almost give them too much credit when you say that they did it for means of survival. They did it as a way of defending their capitalist interests and everything like that, because you really have to look at the mentality of these people. When the one part was talked about where they said, I think they said the Dutch governor made one man eat his own flesh and stood there and watched him while he was laughing, that's not about capitalism or survival or anything else. If I'm on the street starving, and you're wearing a gold watch and I just stab you and take the watch, well, that's about survival. If I stab you and watch you bleed out in the street while I'm holding the watch, risking my own capture, that has nothing to do with survival. That's about a mentality of cruelty and viciousness. And, you know, to me, you really just have to get into the mentality of these people and what were they thinking? I mean, were they really necessary?
Well, what they were thinking is that they had found something that they wanted and needed, and that from time immemorial, white supremacy has reigned, and that they were white and these were savages. I don't think anyone has said that this was about survival. It was not about survival.
Okay.
Oh, no. We're no one has said that at all.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what y'all were saying. They were doing
this
about
Thanksgiving?
Okay.
Do you celebrate Thanksgiving?
Celebrate Thanksgiving? Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know the negative history behind all. Well, we don't celebrate it in the way of, you know, I don't know if you can make a distinction or not, but we don't celebrate it as a way of celebrating the accomplishment of the Pilgrims and the colonization of the country. It's more of a thing of just you have a roof over your head, you have clothes over your back, you complain about the fact you got a bill to pay, but it's a lot of people on the street who wish they had a bill to pay. So you take a moment to give thanks to the Lord, give thanks to family, you know, just to show some gratitude for the things you have in life and to stop being so jealous and green with envy of everything you don't have just for one day. That is the spirit that, you know, we celebrate it in, but I can understand the criticism of the, you know, the holiday in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can understand that. But I don't think that's necessarily the spirit that everyone, you know, necessarily. I mean, a lot of these holidays, you know, it just means different things to different people. The history of the things, you know, are lost largely. With a lot of them, Christmas, Valentine's Day, Easter, you can pick any one of them. You know, it just means different things to different people.
Mhm, mhm. Hey, Ray, thank you for your call. We've got some other callers, but
all right then.
Yeah, Ray.
I think that one of the things that we have to constantly be mindful of are the parallels of history. 803, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Hello, this is Thomas call from Charlotte.
Hello, Thomas.
Thomas,
thank you
how
for joining
you?
Us.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I mean, the more and more I look around and you see the bombardment of the media and telling you what should be important to you, and you look at the things that we've been passed down, and it is a matter of tradition, and we'll just blindly follow just about anything. It's sad. I mean, it really is. It's because, you know, when we look at, I think what we have to do, I mean, for Black people in this country, we have to be willing to question any and everything that we've been taught. The way that we raise our children. I mean, I grew up in New York, but I got roots down in the South. I got, you know, family down in South Carolina, and there's a certain brutality that some of these children are raised with because of slavery. They still have, because, you know, like when I was going to school, I remember going to school in New York, and because I questioned certain things, you know, white teachers had a tendency to make it seem like I was rebellious, and it wasn't that. I mean, if he said something that didn't make any sense, I needed to explain it. And so, you know, my parents said, you're not there to be smarter than the teacher. You listen to what that teacher got to say. Even if it made no goddamn sense. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things that we have to get out of the habit of letting white people tell us everything that they want us to know. You know, I mean, it's just like if they play tricks on words. If you know, how is it that you can say there's such a thing as dominant and recessive, right, but then don't want to own up to the fact that you might come from a Black person? I mean, how can you be logical and say something that doesn't make any sense?
Yeah. I think that we have to excavate. We have to dig up all this stuff that keeps us sick, keeps us participating in our own demise.
Yeah, and it's I don't know, like, you know, the whole thing with Thanksgiving, because often, you know, my family, they wonder why I don't come around for Thanksgiving, you know, or many of the holidays, because, you know, unfortunately, when you're in a family that call themselves being Christian, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, you have to pretty much keep to yourself, because rather than try to debate them on the merits, you know, some people just, mm-hmm. It's kind of like the red or the blue pill. Some people are not ready for the red pill.
Mm-hmm.
And certain things people just aren't ready for.
Thomas, yeah. You're right. It's like we are in denial about who taught us Christianity.
Exactly.
And why they taught us what they taught us.
Exactly.
You know,
and Thomas raises a good point when he speaks about when he was young and in school, he stood up because certain things didn't make sense. And when he spoke out, he was perceived as being militant. But then when the parent entered, they sided with the teacher. So how is a child, someone who's growing up, how are you going to turn and say, well, no, you're wrong too, to your mother, your father? This indoctrination is, as you know, this still water has run deep. And that's the bottom line. This is indoctrination at the highest level. And it's a little difficult now to really think that somehow we know what the truths are. But to spread that is a daunting task. That's a heavy lift.
Exactly.
That's heavy lifting.
And you know, the sad thing about it was, you know, that, you know, I was fortunate enough that, you know, I went to, you know, magnet school. Some, you know, I grew up in the South Bronx, so the schools weren't always the best. So, you know, I was able to go to, you know, magnet schools. I was able to go to private schools on scholarships. And, you know, certain things just reared an ugly head over and over again. You know, I remember being in private school. I got kicked out of private school when I was in eighth grade because they said that I plagiarized a piece of work. They said that there's no way that at my age I can understand the Iliad. So they didn't even give me the benefit of bringing my parents in there and, you know, having a tribunal or something to question me on it. They said, there's no way. So you're trying to tell us you're smarter than both your parents? I said, no, I'm not being smarter than both my parents. I've just been reading it. So I started taking Latin when I was in second grade. I started reading, you know, things about the Greeks and about Egyptians and about Norse. So I always had fascination with mythology and religion. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, they decided, you know, I wasn't worthy of being in there at the glory of school anymore. But I think that a lot of what we have right now is an age of anti-intellectualism. That's why you see the rise of a person like a Sarah Palin. And, you know, these young people, it's sad. Like, you know, you start seeing a lot of this asexual behavior, androgyny, and stuff. There was a brother on Blog Talk, very informative show. I don't know if you've ever listened to Victim of Racism on Gus T. Renegade's show. Usually comes, well, he comes a couple times a week, and he had those guys who would call themselves the Mean Girls of Morehouse, the Plastics, right? They named themselves the Plastics after a fictitious group of suburban white girls, okay? Now, they talk about gender bending, and they talk about, you know, being androgynous. So my thing is, my take on some of these guys, and the parallel with both of these guys was one's father wasn't in his life at all, and the other one's father was in his life somewhat. And one was raised by his grandmother, and one was raised exclusively by his aunt and his mother. So I asked him, I said, you know, do you know where this term androgyny comes from, or you know where all this kind of starts from? And he's like, no. And I said, well, are you familiar with Hermaphroditus? Hermaphroditus was worshipped as a god by the Greeks, and basically had male and female parts. So all these years it's been passed down. This is something that, you know, that's telling about a people. When you make someone into a deity, that is something that's very telling about that people. And I said, this gender confusion that you experience, this is something that's planned. I asked him a very serious question. I said, what do you think happens when two certain people don't procreate? What do you think happens? They cease to exist, right? You know? And then you start seeing all these black men being so-called homosexual, so-called gay. And it's just because they don't understand the history. They, you know, like Saturnalia became a festival after a crushing defeat from Hannibal. The Romans decided, okay, you know, we got ass whipped by this black African guy, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to beat our wives and change places. But see, of course, they never going to teach you that stuff in school. So, yeah, my take on Thanksgiving is what we have to be thankful for. We've been stripped of our culture, we've been stripped of our language, our mores, our folkways, our norms. We have no authentic language. So what is it for us to really be thankful for? We have no economic power base. We have no infrastructure. What is it for us to be thankful for other than being on a plantation?
Well, I think that we have to find our way off the plantation, and that is the point. Thomas, thank you so much for your call. I think you've made some very good points, and I hope that you'll join us each Saturday night here. I think we have to keep excavating. And I read the story. I read the Vibe article on the plastic men at Morehouse, and I came away from that more confused than ever.
Listen to the interview.
Pardon me?
Gus has an interview with them. It was Michael Leonard and Diamond, the two of the plastics. If you go in the archives and you look up under Victim of Racism, it was on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think about an hour and a half or 2 hours with them. These brothers are just confused. They are really confused. It's really sad.
I think that all of our injuries have confused all of us. Some of us in one direction, and some of us in another direction. Thank you, Thomas, and you have a good Sunday.
All right.
Take care, Thomas.
See, there you go, Alpha. I think that we recognize, we do. I mean, if you look at some of the conversation that's going on in the chat room at Our Common Ground, you recognize that there is a lot of conflict around this holiday and how we fit in it. I'm not going to go so far with Thomas as to say that there are not things that we have to be thankful for. But what we have to understand is the difference between our individual lives and our collective lives. Our number is 347-838-9852. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls at Our Common Ground. We're going to open up our lines and open up the mic for what's on your mind. We'll be right back.
You know, Alpha, I figured it out. It's what you've been saying all along.
Finally, our premium level, the Congress! For this, you had to live in luxury, write laws that benefit your wealthiest contributors, and steal everything you can find till you're indicted.
You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Grant, my co-host, Alpha of the Alpha Show.
My life was going downhill fast. Everybody was on my case. Now, I kept hoping that life would change real soon. I knew drinking too much messed up my life. A friend suggested I check out AA. It worked. I found myself in an AA group. Finally, I've got my act together. Alcoholics Anonymous. It works. Look us up. Check your phone book, newspaper, or AA.org.
You're listening to Our Common Ground, Saturday night open mic with my co-host, Alpha of the Alpha Show. Please check out our other broadcast products at TruthWorks Network. TruthWorks Network is the Black University on the air at Blog Talk Radio. We provide the best of ideas, explanations, exploration, scholarship, and speeches, interviews, and audio documentary. TruthWorks Network and Our Common Ground. We know what to do with radio.
Yeah, we do know what to do with radio. Our number is 347-838-9852 here at Our Common Ground. Alpha, we've got another caller, and we're going to go to 610. And thank you all for being with us tonight. And thank you, caller, for being with us. I respect you on our common ground.
Yes, I'm glad to be aboard on this lovely evening. Brother Brock, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Brother Brock, welcome, welcome.
Brother
Brock, how are you?
Excuse me for being a little bit late to the classroom, but I did catch about half of the excerpt as far as the Thanksgiving monologue that you were playing. And I like to definitely agree to with, I think that was Thomas, the last person, and the other caller before that, definitely on point,
right.
No doubt. The added part that I would add when Alpha mentioned the way they hide under the cloak of religion, you would have to add to that scenario, they also, and it's not even hide, take the word hide out, the way they use the religion to enslave people, they also use the patriotic flag, the patriotism, all that American U.S., good old USA monologue. So, so many, you know, one of the craziest, I guess you call it a movie, the first movie ever made, it didn't even have sound to it. It was the, what was the name of that one? Just escaped me just that fast. Back in 1906, maybe, the first movie ever made.
I know, and it was just on, you know, it was on cable TV recently.
Somebody in the chat room, I'm sure, will hit it. I'm not in the chat room, but white racism at its finest.
Birth of a Nation. Thank
Birth
you, Ray.
Birth of a Nation. There you go. I knew somebody would hit it.
It was just on cable TV about a week ago.
My. So, you know, that, like, so when you say that monologue that you played explains it all, Birth of a Nation explained it all. And then what I wound up doing is I read my favorite magazine, which is American Legacy magazine by a brother, Mr. Reynolds, and because it's no entertainment, it's all Black history. And what it talked about when it talked about Birth of a Nation, it talked about the there was a sequence to that movie, and I don't know the name of it, but the sequence was supposed to show the other side of it, so some white people were saying, "Look, we're not all like that, and we're going to show the good part, especially, you know, the John Browns type, the advocate people, the people who actually fought hard for Black people." Long story short, when they wound up trying to make the movie, the producers and I guess you can call them the first teabaggers out. Like, oh no, you can't have a rhetorical movie. You can't combat that. You can't dispute what we did in Birth of a Nation. So they wound up putting more money up to fight against that sequel to Birth of a Nation to make sure that the truth never came out. I mean, not the truth, but the other side never came out. So that's what the legacies were talked about. And when you look at that Thanksgiving part, same exact thing. So I'm just glad that you were once again bringing this to light, letting us vent a little bit, connect the dots, as the person said, and especially in my family, as I became enlightened, even though I love my parents, since they were older and they were from deep down south, to keep from getting killed themselves, because my father tells me several people who got killed, including up north when they migrated up north. So it wasn't like you could just be big and bold and do what you wanted. You literally had to walk a thin line. So my mom was always like, no, just get along, do the right thing, don't cause no waves. You know, you have to do all you can do to stay out of jail and don't upset the apple cart. And I understood that. I didn't, you know, as I started getting enlightened, I didn't want to agree with it, but I dare sure understood it because mm-hmm. they lived it. And they know, and they told me, hey, it was either you act right or you were hung. And it was no either or. You know, maybe now we can look at it and say, oh, you know, get out of here. It ain't like that. Because it's so much different now. But my goodness, I really have to give respect to all
my
elders.
Actually, when you think about it, Brock, Brother Brock, it really isn't very much different. I remember when I was very young, I was probably around 12 or 13, and my dad, who during this part of the day would never be home, and I heard him coming through the garage door, and he slammed the door. And you know how children are when parents are, you know when they're really angry. And okay. In my head, I was trying to figure out, what did I do, you know. And I heard my mom say to him, what are you doing here, or something like that. And he said, do you know what they did? And he was like gritting his teeth. And we're standing around trying to figure out, he said, do you know what those bastards did? And that was the first time that I think I ever heard my father curse. And he said, they killed Medgar Evers. And in my head, I'm trying to think, which one of my father's friends was this Medgar Evers that he was talking about? And we have lived through that. We lived through that with Oscar Grant, Troy Davis, the Scott sisters. It has not changed very much, except for it is now done under the guise of law enforcement.
The so-called justice.
How's that apple for your...
Yep,
for your Thanksgiving stuffing.
Mm-hmm. So, like the other caller said, as far as Thanksgiving, it's on the calendar. At whatever job you may be at, you probably have that day off. So you'll as far as we'll definitely
you'll
see our family,
it.
Get together with our family and enjoy our
yeah.
family.
Yeah,
just
I'm
like
wondering what would happen if the stores were open on Thanksgiving Day.
They are.
They are open on Thanksgiving.
They are. They close a little bit early.
Stores in Massachusetts are not open on everything. Thanksgiving Day is the day that even the supermarkets close in Boston.
No.
it should be that everywhere.
It may be
the
day
of the holidays.
If they close in Boston, the only day here in Chicago that most of your major retail, whoever's selling something, the only people that are open on Christmas Day are Walgreens and your gas stations. Your convenience stores. Even some of your 7-Elevens are closed, but not many of them. But Walgreens, that is their big day as far as they're the only source. They do a great business in selling knickknacks, especially since they've turned many of their stores into the grocery inn with bread and milk and, you know.
Well, see, Massachusetts, in New England, in Massachusetts we have what is called the Blue Laws. One, it forbids liquor stores to be open on Sunday. The other is that on Thanksgiving Day, everything, all retail is shut down. There is nothing. You can't even go to the corner. You have to go to the corner store to even get a extra can of cranberry sauce. That's how much the original Puritans hold for Thanksgiving.
I hear you.
Brother Brock, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
How do you handle this conflict with children in your family?
The conflict of the holiday or the racism?
The Thanksgiving thing.
Well, when they now that they're pretty much adult, but when they were children, I never wanted to sway them. I knew I was becoming more. Militant, but I knew, and I tell my other friends, just like maybe my elders told me, if I promote my militant on children, I'm gonna have to go to their school every other day to get them out of trouble and keep them from getting suspended. So I would never. Mm-hmm. I was like, look, you know, don't do as I say, not as I do. That's the type of father I am. Like, hey, you see what I do. You see the protests that I go to. You see how I'm pushed back and fighting back on this, that, and the other. That y'all just keep doing your own thing. And when it hits you in the face as you get older, maybe you'll be prepared because you see what I was going through. And you know, we have family reunions, and we try our best to listen to our old school elders at our reunions when they're all from down South Carolina. And they had farming and two generations away from slavery. So we had great grandparents that were slaves. And even when they were out of slavery, they were in the cotton fields. And out of the cotton fields, they were in the mom house taking care of white people's children, nannies.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they heard the stories as we sat at those family reunions. So they are somewhat prepared, even though we told, let them know, look, you just stay the fine line, the narrow course, school. Don't worry about none of this over here. But when racism hits you, you ain't not going to have to be naive.
You know
it's coming. You know it's coming. So that's the way we worked it.
Yeah. Well, Brother Brock, I hope you have a wonderful gathering.
Yes.
And I think that, and I do wish that for people in our audience, Alpha, I think that we just have to be mindful. We're not trying to destroy folks' dinner that they're putting together, but we really do have to be very mindful. Brother Brock, thank you so much for your call.
Can you mute my mic so I can keep listening on the iPhone?
Sure, right, I can. For those of you who would like to join us and comment on what Ray had to say, or Brother Morbay from Black Unity Radio, or for comment on what Thomas had to say, I do think that we've accomplished what we wanted to accomplish on this, Alpha. What are you thinking?
Well, Dennis, this is a two-pronged scenario. First of all, there is the history that needs to be taught. The history that needs to be taught is the history that many aren't or haven't been exposed to. Because if they were exposed to it at a younger age, there would be less celebration. But because of the media commercialization of the day itself, just like Christmas, it seems to the history that needs to be learned is not being learned. The history that needs to be taught is falling by the wayside. And, you know, these programs that I co-host with you, you know, a lot of times when we speak to one another privately, you know that I am just the political junkie, and I leave it up to you for the cultural and the history and the teaching. And I learn as much just from doing the program with you as if I were sitting in a class. Because, as I said, the youth today have been so indoctrinated that their willingness to be open and receptive to the truth, to the history, that is. And Stephen C. posted a from Frederick Douglass, the passage from...
Yeah, that quote is very powerful.
Very, very powerful, because, you know, this is like, this is what we are seeing today. This is like what they are still doing.
Yeah, yeah. And we thank Stephen C. for it. It's a quote from Frederick Douglass, and the quote is just so apropos to examining how we look at our country. It says, your national greatness, swelling vanity, your denunciation of tyrants, brass-fronted impudence, your shouts of liberty and equality, hollow mockery, your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings with all your religious parades and solemnity are to him mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy, a thin veil to cover up crimes which would disgrace a nation of savages. And for those of you who in our audience, it is well worth going and reading the speeches and the writing of Frederick Douglass, because he was so clear about what this founding was. You know, we should be posting his work everywhere, because we're faced in this country by a nation of ignoramuses, morons, and contrarians. The Tea Party's simplistic concept of freedom fails to recognize that living in close proximity in complex social environments, adults voluntarily refrain from exercising certain liberties for the sake of peaceable coexistence while accepting the liberty of others to do things that may offend but do not actually hurt them. You know, you're talking about people. It is absolutely this whining by these Tea Partiers. They expect the federal government to keep out of their lives until there's a crisis, Alpha, and then they need bailing out. But for Tea Party supporters, freedom is all about me, me, me. It's the classic whine of a spoiled adolescent, the demands for freedom without responsibility. And Alpha, what are the freedoms? Freedoms to trash the planet to satisfy an immature urge to drive gas-guzzling cars. Freedom to own guns, which even if you never fire them in anger yourself, may be turned on a class of schoolmates by your teenage son, whose mind you have warped with your chip-on-the-shoulder rants. Freedom to overthrow any government reluctant to let its people work for slave wages to keep you in cheap food so you can be bothered, so you won't even have to be bothered to grow it for yourself. For this rugged frontiersman of today, and that's what I'm calling them, is far more likely to waddle to his SUV and drive to Walmart than plow a field and scatter. I'm so fed up with this nonsense that we have to put up with from the morons. They're trapped in the past. fighting a battle that was won more than a century ago. You know, opticians, accountants, computer programmers are not cowboys, even if they'd like to be. And the Indians, the so-called Indians, have all been exterminated. So what the hell are they talking about, Alpha? Please explain it to me.
Well, they have their own, you know, Janice, this goes to the creation. And this is what has come to fruition, is this massive communications network where they don't have to abide by anyone's mindset but their own. They don't have to abide by any other's perception but their own. They have the mechanism of media to create a truth, to basically tell you what is correct to think and just be dismissive of any and everyone else's perception. We saw that with the way candidates for public office ran away from traditional media. We saw that with Sarah Palin when they hid her for over 2 months. And she wouldn't talk to media. And then when she did talk to media, was exposed as such a fool that then they turned around and began to criticize media as being the got-you liberal media. When all that there was, the fact is that she is so stupid that she doesn't have the IQ of a bag of hair. But they have created this mindset, just as she told the candidate, Christine O'Donnell, don't talk to the media. Use Fox to get your message out. They have created this secondary world by which they set the rules, they follow the rules. They're like a child with their fingers in their ears, screaming so they don't hear the facts.
Yep. You know, before we close tonight, Alpha, I did want to mention that the Senate finally voted an appropriations for the $2.5 billion for black farmers. It's interesting that they waited now to do this. It's going to be very interesting to see how that's going to fall out. The timing on it is interesting, and I think we need to keep our eye on that, and we need to keep our eye on how Wall Street is going to be on the hook for all of these foreclosures. We also need to keep our eye on what is happening with an upturn in this new Afghan war that could possibly cost this country $125 billion. And we also need to keep our eye on something that I think is intriguing, and I don't know if you've talked about it, if you've looked at it. And it's this whole underground of anti-war, anti-government sentiment that's going around. I mean, all of the conservative bloggers are all of a sudden having a lot to say about how bad the government is managed. We're going to take one more call, 443. You don't have a lot of time, but we thank you for your call. I respect you. What are your comments, very quickly? We only have a few. We only have 5 minutes.
I'll be as quick as I can. This is Ray. I just had to call back in because I think that, let me be quick about this. when Barack Obama won the presidency, that was the first time anyone had won the presidency and the media didn't do a breakdown demographically of how well he had done in this state or that state versus other presidents. And the reason for that was when you looked at Arizona, where Obama only lost by 9 points, Texas, where he only lost by 11, Georgia, where I think he lost by like 7 points or something like that. Barack Obama ran better in some of these states than Bill Clinton did, even though he had Ross Perot on the ticket, okay? And what that was evidence of was the shifting demographics in this country, okay? White conservatives are quickly becoming the minority. Barack Obama didn't just win, okay?
Yeah.
He crushed John McCain. We used electorate with 60 million votes. If he could beat John McCain with over 10 million votes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So after they had that 10 million vote stomping, then they run out, and all of a sudden, all the spending that's been going on for 20 years is all of a sudden intolerable, okay?
Yes.
Now they're worried about deficits and this and that. They had a $10 trillion deficit for years,
and,
okay?
And it's not the Tea Party people. It's not regular citizens. This is a machine. This is a capitalist, corporatist machine moving through this country for the very reasons that you've outlined, right?
They're very, very afraid that they're going to lose their grip on the country because of the sheer number. And the Hispanic problem for them has become, you know, it's just gotten completely out of hand because they have all these people here. They have 20 million Hispanic people in this country. No one's gonna come out and say you want mass deportation. They're about to send the National Guard in with guns and buses and drag 20 million people out of the country. So the people are here, okay? And they can't get their white conservatives to show any kindness or concern towards these people. They need the votes of the Hispanics, but they can't get the votes of the Hispanics because they have to satiate this wild rabbit bunch of white conservatives behind them.
Exactly.
So they are stuck.
Exactly.
They're stuck in the corner. They're painting themselves into a corner right now, and the only way they can win these elections going forward is to have low voter turnout. That's
exactly.
It. You have to have low. You look at what happened to Harry Reid out in Nevada. Same thing.
We're running out of time.
Right. Okay.
We're running out of time, but you're absolutely on point, and we're going to have open mic next Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to open up with just your comments. So be on tap, okay?
No problem.
Alpha, it's been a pleasure once again. Thank you so much for co-hosting with us. For all of you out there, our listeners, we appreciate you. We appreciate your support of independent talk that matters, for speaking truth, for being willing to consider and be mindful. So we really do appreciate this. And, Alpha, we have got to have voices like Ray's voice, like Brother Morbay. We've got to have voices of consistent mindfulness about what really is going on. And I think that you're the great... you're a great, what do you call those people that march in front of the band? Drum major for all of those things.
You mean with that big hat and that baton? I'll pass.
We're not getting you a big hat and we're not getting you a big baton. Your baton is big enough. Every time you just say, just damn, and you slam that door, we know
no
exactly
hat,
where
you're no baton,
from.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you all for being with us here at Our Common Ground, and we'll see you next Saturday night. And whatever you do, be mindful of the great gathering. I'm Janice Graham, and Alpha has been my host.
Doing
been listening to Our Common Ground with Janice Graham at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. We do our best to speak truth to power and ourselves. We hope you'll join us each Saturday night, 10 p.m., right here in the Wild Wild West.